Welcome to High and Low, a Kurosawa cast, episode 5, the Yojimbo one. And so this episode, we're talking about Yojimbo. And the next episode will be Pigs and Battleships, as promised from episode 4. And as per usual, I'm here, Spencer. And the other guy, he's back.
Sorry I missed out on talking about Momotaro Majuki Bububu. Yeah.
Umi no Shinpei.
Yeah, this is Joel. And I watched Peach Boy. I just couldn't be on the recording. And I think that's punishment enough, having watched Peach Boy.
It's worth watching.
Yeah, I think it is worth watching once, especially because it's kind of a trip-out experience. Like, it's not what you would be expecting.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, so that's Joel's opinion. It's worth watching once. As I said in the last episode, it's getting... Heidi mentioned it's getting a Blu-ray re-release, and I said not everything deserves a Blu-ray re-release. Just watch it on YouTube for free. It's a better use of your time and money.
A Blu-ray re-release. That's for some hardcore collectors or film historian people, I guess.
Yeah, but who would want to pay for that movie?
I don't know. I guess, like I said, I mean, nerds like to brag. They like, oh, did you know I've got the first feature-length anime on Blu-ray? Yeah.
And I can say you can watch it for free on YouTube.
Yeah, but this version is crystal clear. I don't think I really care that much. Come on.
All right, so the first part of the pairing from 1962... Nope, 1961 is Yojimbo. And
Yo Jimbo. Jim.
Yep. So Yojimbo in Japanese means a bodyguard, in case anyone was wondering. If you're listening to this, you've probably seen it. So Joel, do a brief synopsis, as brief as you can, given all the twisty, turny parts of the movie.
And if you're not familiar with the term Yojimbo, you're certainly familiar with the rabbit character, Usagai Yojimbo, who had a guest appearance on one of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle shows. Although he is not an original character from that. He was, I can't remember the name, the first name, Sakai, is the name of the author and artist who does the Usagai Yojimbo. Are you familiar with that stuff, Spencer?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Usagai Yojimbo, he's like a rabbit samurai?
Yes.
Yeah, you should look into it, man. Like, it's actually really, really good.
It's like an anime thing?
No. It's an American comic book that has been going on. I don't know if it's still going on, but it went on for more than a decade, for a long time. Mm. And I think it's been collected in, like, manga style, because obviously they're going for that particular thing. But it's really good, and it's one of those, like, comics, actually not that dissimilar from Peach Boy, where we've got a bunch of animals being, you know, the people, and then horrible things happen.
Oh, interesting. I'm looking it up now, and it doesn't look familiar, but I may check it out.
I've been a comic nerd since I was a kid, so that's probably what I know about it. The art style reminds me of Gru. Are you familiar with Gru?
Groot?
Yeah.
I am Groot?
Oh, man, I can't help you. Gru the Wanderer, G-R-O-O, Sergio Argonis. Okay.
I don't know what you're talking
about.
It's
a Conan the Barbarian knockoff. It's funny.
Oh.
So,
okay.
Yojimbo, 1961. Our hero is a samurai, actually he's a ronin, who we will call Sanjuro, because that is the name that he goes by in both of the movies. Or possibly, well, okay, we're only talking about the Kurosawa movies. So, yes, Sanjuro is the name that he most commonly uses.
Yep.
But no one knows his real name. He is essentially the Ronin with no name.
Or the man with no name.
Or Blondie. Wait.
Yep. Yeah, Clint Eastwood pretty much owes his career to Kurosawa because of this movie.
Yep, we'll talk about that afterwards. It's pretty weird. So he wanders into this town, and the first thing he notices is that all the shutters are closed. Nothing's going around. There is a really goofy guy who's running around banging a gong, saying what time it is, and saying, "Hey, stranger, you can make a lot of money in this town. They're always looking for tough guys like you. If you go over here, we've got the sake maker and his gang, who are led by... Actually, I don't remember the name of the leader of that gang. It's not Subai. Sake maker is Subai, right?
Sake is Yushitara. Sabai is the brothel and silk.
No. I think it's the other way around. Wait, hold on. Oh, I'm looking at it right here. The town mayor and silk merchant who's going insane is Tazimon. And he is in league with... No, you're right. Yeah.
So Saki is Yushi.
Yeah.
Yushi.
Subai. Yukitaro. Yeah, Subai is on the side of the silk maker.
And he has a brothel.
Mm-hmm. And which his wife runs. Oren.
Yeah, Oren. Yeah.
And he's got an annoying son who keeps getting in the way.
And calls his mom mommy.
Mm-hmm. As we all do. I mean, no reason to be ashamed here.
Yes.
Yushitara is the crime leader who is protecting the sake maker. He's got a younger brother named Inokichi, who is...
the goofy, chubby guy from Seven Samurai.
Yeah, he's real ugly. He's...
Yeah, they really ugly him up this time.
Yeah, they slap goofy teeth on him. They make give him a huge unibrow. The kimono or whatever it's not a kimono. Mm-hmm. The thing he's wearing around town is strapped up so that his bottom half looks skinny and his top half just looks like it. I mean, he looks like a radish or something, you know.
Yeah, he looks ridiculous, and he's really stupid.
Yes, he is. He's very stupid. Sanjuro is not ready to pick a side or anything like that. He just sees kind of an opportunity. But you can tell from the beginning, if you know what to look for, that he is like, there's something screwed up in this town. He goes to...
What's the first sign? The town is pretty screwed up.
I don't remember.
You see a dog walk by with a hand in its mouth.
Oh, dog with a severed hand. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You think I would remember that. But a lot of stuff happens in the movie.
Yeah.
That dog never comes back into play, unfortunately.
No. But I have the Criterion DVD of Yojimbo, and on the making of section, they dedicate about 8 minutes of the 45-minute making of to the dog with the severed hand.
It took a long time to get that dog to take that severed hand.
Well, we can get into it later, but it's an interesting story of how and why it happened.
That's funny. Also, the coffin maker seems extremely busy. Even though there appears to be nobody in this town, coffin maker is just hammering away most of the time. So Sanjuro goes, and he goes to the only tavern that's in town, and Ganji is the tavern owner, who's immediately like, "Buddy, you need to get out of here." Okay, this town is dead.
It's a waste of your time, but it's a waste of my time.
There's just nothing good around here, so you might as well just take off. And Sanjuro immediately starts plotting. He's like, you know, I would do that, old man, but first I think I'm going to go over there and offer my services. Like, what?
Sanjuro does say this town is full of men who deserve to die.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's going to basically be a sheriff figure who's going to make sure all the crime is gone by making sure everyone's dead. Pretty much.
Yeah, he's a real Judge Dredd. He's a real Sylvester Stallone. He's a real Bruce Willis.
Carl Malone. Nope, Carl Urban.
Carl Winslow?
Yeah, Carl Malone, the mailman.
Yeah, this year's Carl Malone. What? No.
Noted Republican, Carl Malone.
Oh, that guy.
The Utah Jazz power forward, I think.
Oh.
From the 90s?
Muggsy Malone.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, I know who Carl Malone is. Come on.
Okay.
I grew up in the 90s.
I know, but I don't think you were an NBA fan.
No, but that kind of stuff just... I mean, that was the Jordan era. It infected our lives.
That's true.
You could not avoid it.
Nope.
So, Sanjiro goes and makes his introduction to Subai and his clan, says, hey, if you're looking for another swordsman, first of all, just in case you don't think I'm very good at what I do, he first walks over to a group where a bunch of buttholes are hanging out. When he came into town, they all taunted him, mm-hmm. and he walks over there, and they're immediately like, hey, you better walk away. We're dangerous men. I've got the death sentence in three villages, or something like that.
One of those guys is the designer of the fake hand.
Oh.
The one with the tattoo on his forehead is the one who designed the fake hand.
Is he one of the three?
Yes. He's the one who says he's committed every crime in the book.
Every crime. Jaywalking. Loitering.
Mail fraud.
Mm-hmm. Impersonating a police officer. Anyways, he just walks over there, stirs them up, and quickly kills three of them, including cutting off one of their hands in a very, very familiar scene. I can't figure out why cutting off a hand and seeing it lying on the ground there that way seems so familiar, but yeah.
Oh, wait. Did you think George Lucas saw this movie?
Who?
George Lucas?
Who's that? Is he another basketball player?
He's a human turkey hybrid.
Oh, that guy. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's a Kurosawa fan.
Yeah, he's a big Cantina fan. Didn't help that one of them looked like Chewbacca.
Was it the werewolf man that Obi cut the arm off?
That was that. It was that bad boy.
Oh, bad boy.
Yep.
Not the walrus man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I recently saw an article about how, written by Elliot Kalin, about how mm-hmm. the cantina scene was the best part of Star Wars, and I have to agree.
Mm.
Although you previously said you don't really like the whole alien overload thing.
It's just too much gleep-flops going around.
Aw, man.
I like the costumes, but besides that, it's kind of just takes me out of it.
What about those Athurians with their, like, curved, like, hammerhead shark heads? They're like...
Oh.
Anyways, Yojimbo. Naturally, this impresses Subai, and he brings him into the house. His wife is like, hey, yeah, you know, you should stick around. Things are really good here. And Subai's like, you know what? I will give you one reel to serve me. And he's like, no. Starts to walk out. Okay, two. 10. 20. 30. 50. He finally gets up to 50, and then finally Sanjiro's like, okay. And
yeah, I'll be your Yojimbo.
Yep. And everybody is kind of upset about that because they're all getting paid, you know, like 2 Rio at the most. They're getting maybe silver, not even that. You know?
Yeah, and one of them is a Master Hanma.
And he's like, screw you guys, I'm going home.
Spoiler alert.
Mm-hmm.
And you think he's going to be the big badass villain at the end, and then he... At the first sight of battle in the movie, he runs away.
Oh, that's that guy. Okay, I was wondering what the hell that was even about. I didn't put it together.
It's the guy who was like the big badass that was hired. That was like, you should pay me more.
Yeah.
And then he Then he runs away.
I just see them running in the street, or get all of them all standing out in the road, and then I see Sanjuro looking over the fence, and there's a guy like running away. I was like, "What the hell is that guy's problem?"
It's the guy from Men Who Trend Tiger's Tail, the chief border guard.
Oh, man, he was way more put together in that movie.
Yeah, he looked like he's gained some weight in the 16 years.
Yeah. So, Nue, who is the wife of Sube, says, "Hey,
Oren." Oren.
Oren? Oh, yeah. Nue is the other person.
Nue, yeah.
I mean, there's only two ladies in this movie, really, that have any sort of speaking.
Yeah. It's Kurosawa's kind of par for the course.
Yeah. Oren says, "Hey, husband, come over here. I got something to talk to you about." And, you know, all they do is go to a different room where there's paper-thin walls. So Sanjuro just kind of stands in that area, and she says, "Okay, so we get him to kill that guy, and then we'll kill him and take the money back." So, yeah, that was stupid. Sanjuro gets up, leaves. It says, don't worry, I'll be back, you know. And, well, that's, from then on, that's, let's see, what happens?
There's a lot of plot.
Yeah, there's so many things that go on in this. Let's see, he says...
So there's a battle that's about to happen, and then they stop the battle because the federal inspector's coming in.
He goes straight out, like, okay, we're going to go do the attack right now. And that takes everyone for, you know, surprises everybody. He leads everybody out to the area. The other team comes out. They're on the 40 line for the scrimmage. And they're all basically just having their standoff in the middle. That's when the other Master Swordman runs off. And Sanjuro says, this guy's insulted me. So... I don't want to fight for anybody. I'm just going to go hang up at the top of this bell tower.
And just laugh at everyone.
And he thinks that this is going to solve all the problems. Because at this point, everybody's out there. They've all got their swords drawn. A fight's got to happen.
And it doesn't.
Nope. There's a lot of dancing back and forth. Nobody wants to start it. And some official just happens to be coming down the road. And nobody wants to be... No one wants to get in trouble with this official because obviously they shouldn't be fighting in this town or anything like that. So the goal is to pretend everything's normal, get this guy nice and drunk, you know, with the ladies, or pay him off, whatever they're doing, and then get him out of town. Sanjuro's plan falls through at that point. He has to wait until the official leaves. And it turns out the official... leaves because another official in a different town has been murdered. And
that, that comes into play later.
That's correct. And it seems really fishy that this would happen. But clans pretend to be having peace talks, and they fire all of the gang members that they'd hired for protection. And Sanjuro is just resting at the... Like I said, there's only one inn in town, resting there. And there's these two goofballs who are drinking. And one says to the other, "Jeez, they only gave me two... So they only gave us two silver to kill that official in that other town. This is ridiculous." And I can't believe I can't get more money for nothing, chicks for free or whatever.
Yeah, Yeah.
One of them is smart enough to realize, oh shit, there's Yojimbo right there. There's that guy.
I'm not sure if they knew him. I think there's like, someone's here. We shouldn't be talking like this.
Right. So they're drunk off their butts, but they try to escape. But Sanjuro cuts them off at the pass, ties them up, takes them back to, what is the name? I keep forgetting. Sabui.
I think it's Sabai.
Sobo. Sobi. And because it turns out that Ushitaro has was the one who paid them off to kill that official. So he sells them to Subai and says, okay, you can, you know, now you can get him arrested because you've got these two goofballs. Then he goes over to Ushitaro.
Yes.
And says, hey, they captured two goofballs saying that they killed somebody for you. You might want to take care of that. But another monkey wrench gets thrown here, right?
Yeah.
Something else gets thrown into the works. At this
point, a new character is introduced.
Yep. A nice breath of fresh air. Somebody who's not stupid.
Yep, someone who's just as dangerous as Sanjuro.
Yep.
Because he has a gun.
And who's he played by?
Nakadai.
Oh, Christopher Walken.
Tatsuya Nakadai. Tatsuya Nakadai.
Yeah, I never heard
of
him.
From Face of Another. Mm. And Sanjuro. And he's in a lot of movies.
Never heard of him.
Okay.
Never heard of him.
Okay. Whatever you say.
It sounds really familiar. It sounds like you've told me this before.
Well, not to reel too much, but we just recorded an episode where he was played a villain again.
I don't know what you're talking about. Okay. Anyway, Nakadai, Unosuke, is an interesting character because he's a very striking, handsome, young-looking samurai, but he's also happens to be the only person with a gun in the entire planet.
Yeah.
And he likes nothing better than to pull that gun out of his kimono and be like, hey, what's up?
And he always pulls it out in a very villainous way.
Yeah. Like, oh, did you forget? Or, oh, do I have to use this? Yeah, he's a little too gun happy.
Yeah, well, and he seems to have endless bullets.
Yep.
But it's a movie, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, he must have had them in, like, somebody with a cart was following him behind him. It's just tons of bullets. But he is smart enough to figure out a way to get those two potential traitors back by kidnapping Subai's son. He's terrible, goofus of a son.
Really annoying son.
He's just like useless. He can't fight. They were talking about something he had done earlier in the movie too, where it was like he sucks. Why is he our son?
Yeah, and they slap him around, and they're being abusive parents. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of unpleasant.
Yeah, Orin's like, you're a little shit. And he's like, mommy.
Yeah, and so there's a prison exchange that doesn't go quite as planned.
See, you know, they're going to exchange these two guys for his son, obviously. And instead of that happening, Nakadai, Unosuke, just shoots the two traitors. Yeah. And they're like, hey, we're going to hold on to the sun. So what do you think of that, loser?
And I think that's when they captured Nui.
That is when they reveal that they have captured Nui, who has not been a character in the movie until here.
Yeah.
But he is very, like, everyone is very shocked that Nui has been captured. And it turns out that Nui is just the most attractive woman in the village who is married to some schlub. They have a child together, but this schlub lost money gambling in what is the name of the sake maker? Or is it
played by your father?
Yeah. Oh, really? I didn't realize that. Oh, he looks really old in this.
Yeah, he does.
They old him up.
Yeah, well, he wasn't that old yet.
No.
He was only in his 50s.
I mean, he looked fine in Sanjuro, so.
Yeah.
And this, he's just like, maybe you can find that woman for me.
Well, he always looked middle-aged, even in Menutra and Tiger's Tail.
Yeah.
Well, he was in his 40s. Never mind.
He's an old man, I tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Sake brewer is Tokoyomon. That's it. Tokoyomon apparently has taken his wife as payment for his gambling debts and ravages her every night, which this guy was so upset about that happening that he built a little hut next to the place where all these, you know, ravagings are taking place just so that mm-hmm. he can catch a glimpse at his wife, who he misses very much. He gets beat up all the time, but he doesn't care.
Yeah.
It's really sad, but when Sanjiro hears this story, he just thinks it's pathetic. He hates it. But later they do a full trade where, you know, Subai gets his son back and they smack him around and the sake maker gets his woman back. But you can tell Sanjiro is not sitting well on this. He does not like that this extra element that these bad people are doing such terrible things. And the first time that I watched this movie,
yeah,
it really seemed like Mifune's character was just being mm-hmm. opportunistic. He was just really in it for the money. Although he does, obviously, the next thing.
Care about,
next thing that he does out of like the goodness of his heart. He doesn't have to. But he really did seem opportunistic. This time when watching it, it seemed mm-hmm. like his intention was to like fix the town when he started off.
I don't know. I think he's purely an anti-hero. He just wants to make sure or just kill off all the bad people so they can restart
right
anew.
Yeah, he wants the fastest way, but he wouldn't mind making a little coin.
No, but it doesn't seem to care about money though.
No. He throws it around.
Yeah.
So Sanjiro decides that he is going to go offer his services to this is probably the worst part of the podcast, me always trying to remember. Ishitora, who is the boss. Ushitora?
Yeah, he goes to Ushitora. And,
who has already asked him to be his bodyguard at some point, and Sanjiro refused, but this time he takes him up on the offer for a sweet 30 Ryo now and 30 Ryo after the whole job is done. But the very first thing he does is he says, oh, so how many people do you have guarding that woman that you guys traded for earlier? Like, oh, we got 6. Don't worry about it. He's like, no, that's not enough. And so the dumb brother is like, well, I better go, you know, I better go fill in these ranks because I'm the toughest. Grr.
Yeah, he thinks he's the toughest.
And Sanjiro is like, well, I'll go with you because just in case, I just want to check this whole thing out. You know, I'm suspicious. So they go over there. And everything looks fine. It's all quiet.
Yeah.
The hut is next there. You can see the lights on.
And immediately, ugly brother beats up the man.
But
Kohai?
He only does that. Is that what his name is?
I think Kohai.
Yeah, Kohai. Yeah. The only reason he does that is because Sanjiro goes, oh my gosh, wait, don't you normally beat up on that guy while you're over here? Like, oh, I forgot, I gotta beat him up. I kind of wish I had a friend like that. Don't you normally buy me a soda? Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I heard you're really good at fixing cars. But while he does that, he takes this opportunity to, while he's beating up that guy, mm-hmm. Sanjiro rushes back in there and goes, oh my gosh, all 6 of these, the guards are dead. You need to go get your boss. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And this guy's too dumb to go check first, so he runs off. Sanjuro heads towards the what are those called?
What do you mean?
What are the domiciles called?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, he starts heading to where the woman is, where Nue is being held. One of the guards comes out, and Sanjuro unsheaths his sword, and this guy immediately knows, oh my god, we are screwed. And yeah,
he quickly kills all six.
Yep. He kills them without breaking a sweat. He takes the woman out, Nue, and brings her out into the area where her husband and her son are waiting, and says, "You guys need to run off. Here's 30 Ryo, the money that he just got from the other crime lord. Take it and get away and never come back." He goes back in and he makes it look like a huge fight happened. He starts breaking down the walls. He tears down, there's like water sacks above the ceiling and stuff like that. He's tearing through the panels and he just chops through everything. It looks like chaos happened. He runs back outside to wait for Doofus to get back with his posse. And the wife, the husband, and the son are still there. They are on their knees. They are bowing before him to thank him. And he's like, "Idiots! Idiots! Do you want to die? Get the hell out of here!" And finally they listen. They take off. But you can already tell that this is probably a bad thing. It was a good thing that a good man did, but it's going to bite him in the ass.
And pretty quickly it does, because Nakadai realizes, Uno, as they call him, realizes that, the ugly brother was recruiting new people, and he heard that they were seen.
Yeah. And not only that, but the husband wrote a thank you note, which he snuck back into the village to give to the innkeeper.
Yeah.
And it's like, this guy just wants to die, obviously. I'm surprised that Sanjuro wasn't like, next time he comes back, I'm just going to kill him. Because he is stupid. But yes, this ends up getting Sanjuro caught, which means he gets the shit beaten out of him.
By the giant.
Mm-hmm. That's Kanuke, who I don't think I've seen him in anything else.
I haven't either, but he is, I think, he has to be over 7 foot.
Yeah, he is a literal giant.
Yeah, he's like, I think he's taller than Shaquille O'Neal.
It's played by Namigoro Rashomon. His last name, or his first name is Rashomon? That's weird.
I guess it must be.
Or, well, that'd be his last name, wouldn't it? Interesting.
I'm not sure with the translations.
Because normally it'd be first name or last name, first name, right? So it would be like
Family name than your personal
like
name.
Like Mifune Toshiro.
Yeah.
Okay, so his last name is Rashomon. Anyway, he is beaten. For some reason, they don't kill him. This is something that comes up in the next movie. I guess, I don't know if they want information from him, or they just enjoy the idea that they get to torture him for a long time.
I think it's maybe he'll turn around to their side because he's such a good warrior. Maybe don't kill him just yet.
It'd be a shame to kill such a good warrior.
Yeah.
A guy who can beat almost anyone.
Yeah, and so he does a dare and escape. That's actually a really great escape because he's just literally crawling around everywhere, bloodied, and he makes it alive, and then...
Yeah, he can't use his legs, so he's literally just pulling himself along and crawling out wherever he can, but he makes it back to the innkeeper.
Gonji.
Who hides him and tells everybody that Sube has rescued him and is keeping him at his place. So that starts off basically the last act in the movie where they're like, okay, we're going to smoke him out and we're going to kill Sube and his whole gang. We're going to take over this town and take revenge. And rather than escaping or anything like that, because you can't do that, Sanjuro asks the innkeeper and the coffin maker to put him in a coffin and cart him out of town. Before he gets carted out of town, though, he makes him stop in the middle of the road so he can watch all the chaos.
Yeah, and you see Nakadai, I think Nakadai kill Seibei, the Oren, and the Norin son.
Yeah, well, Oren actually gets killed by
Ugly Brother.
By Dumbo. Yeah, Ugly Brother.
Yeah.
In a, actually, like a really quick, like a moment where people were like, don't kill her, and then he just like does it anyways.
Yeah, so we clearly know who won.
Yeah. So that gang is definitely defeated. Only people left are
Ushi
and his gang. But the coffin maker runs off because he's scared. The innkeeper has to recruit the Ugly Brother to help him take this coffin all the way to the graveyard.
And luckily, he's stupid.
Yep.
So it works.
Doesn't bother to look. He's just like, I can carry this real good. Carries it to the graveyard, and then he's like, hey, weren't you supposed to be looking for someone? Oh, yeah! Runs off.
And every time like he gets tricked, he always says, my brother's going to beat me up.
Yep.
And runs off.
Live in fear of your brother. But, and this is a really cool scene. Sanjuro gets out of the coffin. The innkeeper says, there's a small temple right over here. We can hide you in. Can you stand up? And he says, yes. And then he stands up in the coffin. And the innkeeper remarks, you don't look like the living anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And Sanjuro, I can't remember exactly what he says, but whatever he says makes him smile. And the innkeeper's response is, it's worse when you smile.
Oh, yeah.
And it is. It is a really, like, he's gruesome. He's been beat up so badly. And yeah,
it's really great makeup effects.
Yeah. It's cool. But he ends up spending the next couple of days recovering. When we see him again, he is practicing throwing, it's like a knife or a kunai.
Yeah, pretty much. Whatever you said.
Yeah. And, like, he's hitting this leaf that's blowing randomly around every time. So he's gotten really good at throwing this thing. Getting his hand-eye coordination back.
That might come back later.
Mm-hmm. But
yeah, he's kind of like my new puppy, Freya, who loves to attack leaves when the wind blows them away.
Yeah, I've heard that about your dog.
Yeah, and if she sees anything move, she has to bite it.
And you named her Odin?
Freya.
Ifrit?
I wanted to name her Cricket, but no one wanted Cricket.
Cricket's a great name.
I know.
So he's been hanging out at this temple. The innkeeper's been bringing him stuff. Somebody starts slamming on the door, but it's not the innkeeper. It's the coffin maker. Who's telling him that the innkeeper is, they caught him trying to bring stuff. And they figured out he must be here. And so they've tied up the innkeeper, who's not telling them anything. Sanjuro gets up to go. He's got his little knife in his hand. The coffin maker's like, what are you going to do? Kill them all with that? He's like, I'll make sashimi out of them. And he's like, no, I've got this sword from a dead guy. It's bad luck to use the tools of the dead, but I figure it wouldn't hurt in this case.
Yeah, Sanjuro doesn't care.
Yeah. And that comes down to a last standoff where it's literally like high noon. He's at one end of the long stretch of town. There are 10 people on the other end, including the giant, the stupid brother. There's Ushi, right? Or not Ushi.
Ushi.
Ino. No, which one is what's the name of the gunfighter?
Uno. Uno. Yeah, Uno. Uno.
Ushi is actually not there because something else crazy happens to him later.
Ushi?
Yeah.
I thought he was the... Never mind.
He's not the dumb brother. He's the gang. He's the gangster leader.
Yeah, I thought he was there in the lineup.
No, he's not there in the lineup. But anyways, we'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
But everybody's waiting for him. And naturally, Uno's got his gun out. He's pointing it. And at first, they start walking towards each other. Uno is smiling. He's got his gun out. But then his smile slowly disappears as he realizes that he's not... Sanjiro is not freaked out by this gun. It's like making no difference to him. Uno points the gun directly at him, ready to fire. Sanjiro dodges to the left, runs over there. The fire misses, and then he flings the knife he's been carrying right into Uno's hand and quickly cuts him down with his sword.
Yeah, in the behind-the-scenes documentary, that fight lasts 10 seconds.
Yep.
1 second per kill. But doesn't feel like that. It feels like an epic 10-minute fight.
Yeah. Well, you know, everybody does get cut down really fast, but...
Yeah.
It's kind of great.
Yeah, it feels... It doesn't feel like 10 seconds, but it actually... In real time, it's 10 seconds.
Yeah, I feel like you see every cut. You can count every one. It is exactly 10 cuts. Well, actually, it's 9 cuts, because one of them is cowers, and he says, children shouldn't be carrying swords. Go back to your mother and eat gruel for the rest of your life.
No, it's, go home to your mother and live a long life eating gruel.
Close enough.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite movie lines. And every time I watch this movie, like, oh yeah, this is where they have that, one of my favorite lines.
That'd be great on a t-shirt. Go home to your mother and live a long life eating gruel.
Yeah, and then he runs away.
Yeah.
The coward.
So that guy lives. Uno is still slightly alive. He's begging Sanjiro to hand him back his gun because he feels weird not having it. Which, you know it's going to be... He has one last bullet to shoot, but Sanjiro knows that he's not going to make it. He hands him his gun, and Uno goes blind, so he can't even fire his gun in revenge.
Nope.
That's when the...
The mayor.
Is it the mayor who comes out with the prayer?
Yeah, the prayer drum.
Yeah, he starts playing the prayer drum, which he's been playing every once in a while to... have success for one of the gangs, but he's been going slowly insane, and this is finally the breaking point for him. There is another funny part right before this, who this guy I think is the sheriff, the one who's been like calling the time and stuff like that. Yeah. Where he comes out and he's like, and Sanjiro's like calls his name and he's like, yes, and he's like, go hang yourself. I almost expected him to be like, okay.
Yeah.
But the mayor is walking around banging his prayer drum, like walking around absent-minded, and then he looks into a building and he sees someone, and that's the person he's seen is Ushi, the other gang leader. He runs in there and you hear he comes out
bloody.
Exactly, the mayor comes out covered with blood. And basically the movie ends with Sanjiro.
He says his catchphrase, see you around.
See you around. He cuts the ropes for the innkeeper in a quick, cool move real quick, though. Yeah, then he's like, adios. Hasta la vista. Whatever.
Yep, it ends just like the sequel.
Yep.
It's an upcoming episode. We discuss it in further depth, Sanjiro. It ends the same way with... a big duel. He says, see you around. And the theme plays and end of movie.
Now I want to know if that's how the Yojimbo versus Zatoichi one ends. Probably not.
I doubt it.
See you around. So, I can't see.
So, a little backstory on the dog with the severed hand. That was inspired by one of the producers was wearing gloves, and the glove, he took off his glove and just kind of threw it on the ground, and Kurosawa thought it was an actual severed hand and freaked out and realized that would having a gag with a severed hand would be a good way to show that the town is corrupt. Because the original plan was... He didn't really know what to do, so he's kind of would figure out at the time. And everyone was like, how about crows? How about, like, starve animals or whatever? And every time, and all those ideas, he's like, no, this has been done before. I want something unique. And so he got scared by the glove. And so he was like, I don't know, a dog carrying a severed hand.
I don't know. So to pull it out of a hat.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
I see.
And the guy, I think the guy he cuts off the arm is the guy who made the fake arm and the fake hand. The guy with the forehead tattoo.
Yeah. So he's a man who lost two hands and a glove.
Yes.
That's terrible. So how are you? What are your general feelings on this thing?
I still really like it. This was my first Kurosawa. It's the one that made me realize I should be watching some more. I should be watching movies like this instead. And kind of like with Sanjuro, I find it very comforting. Although this time around, I realized how awful the character Sanjuro is in this movie.
What do you mean awful?
Like he seems to take a lot of pleasure in the act of killing people.
He certainly has no qualms about it. I mean, he thinks if a bad person is bad, they deserve to die. I mean, that's like one of the lines after he gets beat up and they're like, oh, you're going to die. He's like, I can't die yet. There's too many people I need to kill.
Yeah, like he means well, but the way he does it is not the best way to go about it.
Right.
Yeah, and watching it this time, I realize he's kind of an asshole a little bit.
Well, he's definitely not afraid to just not explain himself. He's trying very hard to be mysterious all the time. Like, it's especially when you're comparing this to Sanjuro, the way that he acts in Sanjuro, he does things that seem crazy, but because he's dealing with those 9 goofballs in that movie, he feels like he has to explain everything he does. Like, oh, I'm going to go over there and tell them I'll work for them. And in this, when he says that, the innkeeper's reaction is like, what? My word.
Well, the innkeeper, I think, is like the moral center of the movie. He's the one who's like, what you're doing is stupid. Like, he's a straight man.
Yeah.
Who realizes... Who's the voice of the audience who's like what you're doing is insane, just leave.
Yeah,
and they have an interesting relationship where it's very civil, but they also kind of get on each other's nerves.
Yeah, but he also never like kicks him out. He's always sharing his food, sake, whatever.
Yeah.
So, there's a friendship there. It's just not a typical friendship. What anyone would call that. Anyways, what I was saying about him having to explain to these 9 goofballs, he has the chance to be more mysterious in this here because he doesn't have to guard these 9 kittens from getting themselves killed in this. The only person he seems to, until the end, that he seems to endanger is himself over and over again.
And he cares about the innkeeper because he rescues him.
Right, that's what I'm talking about until the end. At the end, he finally does endanger somebody else. And it all branches from when he decided he had to free that woman from her terrible fate.
Yeah.
I really like that moment there. That's the whole setup for him freeing this woman just to kick them out, and the whole like double take that happens when they don't immediately run off. It reminds me of, once again, going back to the second movie, Sanjuro, where he's just befuddled every time the noble woman is like, you shouldn't do that. He just is like, "What? Don't thank me. Get the hell out of here."
Yeah, like with, not talk about Sanjuro too much, the movie Sanjuro too much, but in that the old woman It seems that in the second one, he's more tired. Like, he's just more tired of it, and he's more willing to listen to someone with a different opinion.
Yeah.
Where in this one, he's more immature and more impulsive.
And he seems older. He literally seems older in the second movie. Like, I don't know if they just made his clothes more ragged, or if they put gray in his hair or something like that. And here, he doesn't seem that old. Mm-hmm. He says that he's closer to 40 and stuff like that. But you know, he could
that's
be...
That's a joke in both movies.
Yeah, 35-year-old. Yes,
Sanjuro means 30-year-old. And his and the last name is always whatever plant he's looking at the time.
Yep.
I think this one is Mulberry Field.
That is correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And in the third movie, he's like, call me Sanjuro Weed Plant. Marijuana? Yes, that's what I meant to say. You can tell how big of a square I am. I just called it a weed plant.
If I remember correctly, in Zatoichi versus Yojimbo, he is still camellia tree, camellia plant.
Oh, really?
If I remember correctly. Yeah, they didn't bother doing that gag a third time.
Missed opportunity. Let's see, what else?
I like the cinematography in this one a lot.
Yeah.
I was reading reviews and pieces on this, and something they brought up that I didn't really realize is that you don't see many diagonal angles. It's always shot from right angles, for the most part.
Well, that's interesting.
And it has your standard Kurosawa, very symmetrical shots. Like, there's in the scene where it's the innkeeper, Kohai, and Sanjuro. Sanjuro's in the background, and he's furthest back, and then innkeeper is in front of Sanjuro to the right, and then Kohai is in the foreground, and he's in center, and it's very symmetrically set up where Sanjuro is not speaking at all, and he's just listening, and yet you're immediately drawn to him just, like, drinking sake in the background, listening to the Kohai.
Telling his tale.
Yeah. And they do that shot earlier when the official comes, and you see...
Through the slats,
and you see it very symmetrically. Each man is perfectly... in line with each rung of the, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and then that shot's ruined because Goofus' stupid face shows up right there.
Yeah.
Oh, you're pretty strong. You want to go work for me and my brother? I think this movie is a masterpiece. I think that it, like, I don't, my rating system is just generic, you know, up to 10 points out of 10. And I don't often give out in my, you know, my archaic system a perfect score, because I think it's often, even something that I really, really like, I still will hesitate to give it a perfect score because, I feel like a rewatch also has to be, feel like it would reward me. And this movie, I've only seen it twice, honestly. But the second watch through, I was already seeing things that I hadn't noticed before, and just character nuances, and noticing the music for the first time, really, this time, which...
I love the music.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's probably my favorite Kurosawa. Drunken Angel is my favorite Kurosawa soundtrack, but this is second favorite.
It's great.
Yeah, I love the Yojimbo theme.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is one of the few that I would call a, I mean, for lack of a better term, a perfect movie. Like, I wouldn't change anything about it.
Have you, in the making of documentary, they talk about, Kurosawa was directing, where he had all the all the main cast come up with a character quirk that they would do to identify them. And I'm not sure if you noticed, but Sanjuro shakes his shoulders a lot.
Yes, he does.
And it's not ever said in the movie, but it's supposed to be he has fleas. And it's just really itchy.
I just thought it was like a shoulder shrug thing that he did. But he does it. I noticed he does it at least three times. Like he does it as he's leaving at the end of the movie. There's a point after he introduces himself to gun-toting goofball. And as he's walking away, with the cameras just looking at him, and he does that shoulder shrug thing. He has fleas. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, that's the story that Mifune came up with.
Very good.
So, luckily for us, Bosley Crowther reviewed this movie.
Oh, that guy, huh?
Uh-huh. October 16th, 1962.
Well, what do you have to say?
I'm going to read the last paragraph of his review.
Best movie ever.
However, as in most Westerns, the dramatic penetration is not deep, and the plot complications are many and hard to follow in Japanese. Kurosawa is here showing more virtuosity and strength. Yojimbo is a long way in the wrong direction from his brilliant Rashomon.
This guy just loves Rashomon.
Yeah. And that's like the one Japanese movie he seems to like. So he's saying it's well made. He just thinks it's generic, more or less.
Mm-hmm. He wrote that while he was farting.
Yeah, he wrote that while he is waiting in line to go see the next French New Wave.
Not even, man. He was seeing, I don't know, let's see, 62. He was probably seeing...
Was Godard making movies?
No, 61. Yeah, he was.
Because I know he's, I've said this before, he's a French New Wave guy.
No way. I'm just kidding. Mm-hmm. He's still making movies now.
Godard?
Yeah.
Oh.
He made a 3D one not too long ago.
Oh, I thought like all those guys from that generation were dead.
Not Godard. Not. He seems to be invincible. Mm. Nothing can kill him as far as I know. Okay, so he was probably beaten off while watching Breakfast at Tiffany's there.
Yeah, probably.
There you go. One of the few Godard movies that I've seen and like, A Woman is a Woman, was from that year.
Okay. Do you remember Pigs and Battleships?
Of course I remember Pigs and Battleships.
Okay. Do you see any connections or correlations between these?
Well, are we releasing this one before Pigs and Battleships?
Yes.
Oh boy, this is going to be time warp.
That's the order.
That's okay. Spoiler alert, Pigs and Battleships is a really good movie.
Yeah, we both highly recommend it.
So, other than the gangster thing, you know, there are gangsters in this town. Obviously, Pigs and Battleship is all about gangsters doing stuff. Mm-hmm.
Oh, one thing I realize that they both have is, if you remember in Pigs and Battleships, there's like the guy being released from prison who they talk about as like the toughest, like most badass killer ever, and then he immediately dies.
Yeah, the one that was hiding out and was like, I need to get a meeting with the big boss.
Yeah, and Yojimbo, we have the guy, like the master samurai, who's like, you should pay me more money, and then he runs away before the first battle.
Yeah. Yeah, very similar. There's also lots of gunplay in Pigs and Battleship. There's one gun in this one, but there seems like there's a lot of gunplay because that guy shoots a bunch of people.
Yeah.
They also have in common that they're kind of convoluted story-wise. There's a lot of... I mean, Pigs and Battleship seems way more convoluted because they're... It's not just one character focus. It's focused on at least three different people. The girlfriend, the kid, and his boss, I'd say.
Oh, the one with the cancer?
Yeah, the one who's sick and doesn't realize he's not that sick.
Yeah.
And this really is about things that Sanjuro ends up learning about. So even though there are a bunch of plot things going on, we're not really spending time with other characters, getting to know them or anything like that.
No, it's a Kurosawa, so it's pretty focused on the one character.
Yeah.
Except for Dodeskaden. That one is about a whole community.
I was going to say, the Bad Sleep Well is not single character focused, even though...
Oh, yeah, it isn't.
Yeah.
That will be coming up soon.
We'll get to that later.
With special guests, Shannon Camp, hopefully.
Oh, Shakespeare?
Patton Pinnett. Uh-huh, because she knows Shakespeare, and I don't know about you.
Sure. I could tell you all day about Hamlet.
I could tell you I was surprised to learn that Bad Sleep Bell was based off of Hamlet.
Oh, good. Yeah. I might know something. But not much.
So, I don't know. There's not much to connect. There's not much connection between these two movies besides, like, some plot stuff.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Pigs and Battleships is a modern. I mean, it's not modern day. I don't think it's literally the 60s, or maybe it is, but.
It's vaguely post-war Japan.
Yeah. And your, this one is, a period piece.
Yeah, I read that Yojimbo is supposed to be representative of the old versus the new.
Mm.
And, like, Yojimbo's supposed to, Sanjuro's supposed to represent the old, like, old Japan, and Nakadai is supposed to represent the incoming of, like, new technology and modernness.
He still gets killed.
Yeah.
Except Sanjuro is a rude person, and I don't think that's usually what people think of when they think of even Ronin as compared to samurai.
Yeah.
But, you know, Kurosawa never plays it like these are honorable people who only ever do honorable things. Like, he's not afraid to show that, like...
The ugly side.
Yeah, they turn into bandits. They kill innocent people. Like, it was a rough time period. Yeah. And you didn't want to, like, run into a samurai. You didn't want to run into a ronin. Because if they decided they had to kill you, they could easily do it.
Yeah, it wouldn't take much.
Right. They're all highly educated, except for that person that Toshiro Mifune plays in Seven Samurai, because he's not really a samurai.
Well, yeah, it should be called Six Samurai.
Six Samurai and that other guy with a sword.
Yeah, and a fake.
Six Samurai, Six Extreme Samurai. Yeah,
he's a phony in that one.
Six Samurai and a phony.
It's accurate.
Yep.
Starring Denzel Washington.
Do you have anything else to say about either movie?
No, but I think they're both really great. I think Yojimbo's a masterpiece. I thought Pigs and Battleship was a really great movie. It's not perfect, you know. It's kind of messy plot wise, but it's such an interesting, like, piece of film that. Like, if I had to emphasize people should watch something, obviously, I think people who are into film are going to watch Yojimbo at some point, because it's classic. But I would really everyone should check out Pigs and Battleships, because I don't think it's as well known, and it's really good.
Yeah, it's pretty much a Coen Brothers, clearly the Coen Brothers were influenced by this movie.
Yeah.
It's tonally... like Fargo and Big Lebowski and they're more. It's just a Coen Brothers movie, pretty much.
Yeah, and you can even feel Quentin Tarantino influences in there, as you can with a bunch of movies like that.
Yeah, it's like a real indie '90s type movie.
But we'll get into that in 2 weeks.
Yes. So, one more thing about Yojimbo I forgot to mention. in the beginning, the corrupt sheriff, he tells Sanjuro that to get them to behave, this cut off one of their arms, and then he goes and does
cuts
that.
Cuts off one of their arms, yeah. Actually, you know what? Before we quit, there is something we should talk about, and that is A Fistful of Dollars.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen that.
Really? You haven't?
No.
Okay, how many times have you seen Yojimbo?
3 or 4.
Okay. So my suggestion is that you put on Fistful of Dollars and prepare to be shocked by exactly how much it is, like almost shot per shot, Yojimbo.
Oh, really?
It is so striking. Like, I read a story a while ago about the way Kurosawa found out that this movie had been a remake of his because no one told him. The movie was out in theaters. And he went and saw it, and he was like, boy, this seems really familiar. And he's like, holy shit, this is Yojimbo. This is beat per beat my movie. Like, I recognize what I'm seeing. I recognize what the characters are doing. And then the lawsuits started.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought Toho approved of it or something.
Maybe they did, but Kurosawa was not aware of that.
Is Sanjuro the basis of any Western with white people?
You know, I was trying to find if it was like a remade or anything like that, but as far as I could tell, it wasn't. Fistful of Dollars and Yojimbo. I mean, Yojimbo itself is based off of that novel,
Red Harvest. By Dashiell Hammett. It's a disappointing book. If you read Dashiell Hammett, just read Maltese Falcon.
Yeah,
and you're set.
I tried to get through it, and it's okay. It's kind of confusing.
Red Harvest?
Yeah, Red Harvest.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, I found it very hard to follow.
Yeah.
In, like, every third chapter, like, the guy would just drink with that woman.
Yeah.
And get drunk and wake up with a hangover. It's like, just get off the story. This... Anyway.
Yeah, that's what you do in Los Angeles.
In Poisonville.
Yeah. And that particular work has been adapted to film a bunch of different times, including in... what was the Bruce Willis movie? Last Man Standing?
Hudson Hawk?
No, Last Man Standing.
But
if you watch Last Man Standing, it doesn't seem like... It seems like it's a remake of Yojimbo. Like...
Oh, interesting.
As opposed to a direct copy like A Fistful of Dollars is. So, it's...
Is A Fistful of Dollars still good?
Yeah. No, it's still good. It's not nearly as good as The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. It is shorter, obviously. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is like almost 3 hours long.
Oh,
but
wow.
It's like, if I had to choose between Yojimbo and A Fistful of Dollars, obviously I'm going with Yojimbo. But
is A Fistful of Dollars as funny or darkly funny?
I don't find it as funny because the motivations of these characters who are dubbed over in English but are obviously not speaking English seems really silly. Because it starts off with the crazy mayor or the sheriff, I'm not sure, going like, hey, what are you doing around here, buddy? I'm Italian. Just kidding. I'm an American. Whatever.
Another connection between Pigs and Yojimbo is they're both very darkly funny.
Yes, that's true. Yes. I did find a bunch of things more humorous this time watching than I did the first time in Yojimbo. It's, you know, the dog walking with the the hand, I guess, is pointed out as, like, dark humor. It's playing that music. It's like, bomp, bomp. Bomp, bomp, and the dog's just marching off. But every time you see Ugly Brother, it's funny because he's a doofus. And
yeah, he's really, like, his introduction is he's talking to the coffin maker, and the coffin maker says, "We made 2 for them and 4 for us," and then he counts on his fingers to see a difference.
That means we're winning. No one should be dying on our side. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, check out A Fistful of Dollars, because it is a well-made Sergio Leone movie.
Is that where the famous Ennio Morricone?
Yeah, Ennio Morricone.
Yeah, that where the famous soundbite comes from?
No, that comes from The Good, Bad, and the Ugly.
Okay.
It is. It's like they're very similar. All of his mm-hmm. Western themes are very similar, but this it is different. Like, oh, now I'm doubting myself because I haven't seen A Fistful of Dollars mm-hmm. in a long time. I've seen The Good and the Bad and the Ugly recently.
Hmm. Well, Morricone's theme for Hateful Eight is pretty different.
Yes, yes. Like, but you can definitely tell it's his stuff. Yeah. I mean, he is a master at that.
And he's like in his 80s. Mm-hmm. Still working. Oh, I'd like to mention that Tatsuya Nakadai is still alive. He's 84 years old.
He's the man with the gun.
Yep.
Good. I'm glad that some people are still alive.
Yeah, a lot of...
On the planet.
A lot of the production people who worked with Kurosawa, well, some of them are still alive.
Yeah.
But only some.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that about covers it.
Yeah. So, next episode will be Pigs and Battleships. Totally worth it.
Yep.
Check it down, buy it, whatever. It should be seen.
What are we doing after that?
That will be big. No Bad Sleep Well.
Oh, Bad Sleep Well.
And yeah, and Jigoku.
Jigoku.
Sinners of Hell.
I'm excited for. I've already seen the Bad Sleep Well, but I'm excited for both of those to talk about them.
I'm excited for hopeful special guest Shan Camp to be on.
Yeah, she's really cool. So that's gonna be great.
Yeah, and she. I'm pretty sure she can school us in Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm. And then I'll cry.
Yep.
More smart guests.
Yeah, well, hopefully John McCoy will come on for another Shakespeare one.
Yes.
And I have, well, the one I hoped him for, someone else took. But
yeah,
that's a story for another
day. And get him for something else, I'm sure.
Yeah, the other Shakespeare one. You got plugs?
Well, I'll just mention, as usual, I have another podcast called Please Don't Send Me Into Outer Space. You want to check out the episodes on, let's see,
Zardoz.
No, well, that's a good episode, but I was trying to think of the ones yeah. you were on.
Oh, Face of Another.
Face of Another.
Movie starring Nakadai.
Mm-hmm. It's an excellent movie, and it's weird as hell.
Very creepy.
What else?
I was on the Bruce Dern one.
Oh, yeah, yeah, fat, yeah.
Yeah. Fat Squirrel in that one scene.
Fat Squirrel in the movie.
Yeah. Bruce Dern is a hippie that kills
Silent
people.
Running.
A name that makes no sense.
That is correct. And, you know, we cover all kinds of different science fiction and fantasy movies. We recently did Turbo Kid, which we recommend. The one that hasn't been released yet is Wrist Cutters, A Love Story. And if you go back into a farther, you know, we did a two-parter on Labyrinth, other weird, obscure movies like A Man Called Rage, Quincy's Quest. There's like more than a year's worth of content on there right now. So check it out. Please Don't Send Me Into Outer Space.
Yeah. Co-host of that show did the cover art, Aaron Cornelius.
It is our cover art. Wait, that was redone, wasn't it?
What?
Nothing.
he did a high and low cover art.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, I write for Cinema Knife Fight. I have... when's it coming out? Oh, okay, this is coming out in a couple of days. So for this month, there... For Summer Night Fight, I review old TV shows that are science fiction and horror. This month is Beasts. It's a 6-episode long miniseries that was an anthology show. They're all horror stuff about beasts of some kind. So it's just a really fun British show. It's all on YouTube. Or you can buy the Region 2 DVD because it's no Region 1 yet. It's a show that's really worth tracking down. I personally like it. I'll be on Alphabet Flight in February, I think, discussing The Collector, Colossus, and
Cobra,
who is a really lame but kind of cool Captain America villain.
You didn't remember The Collector, who was in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
No, we didn't.
Well, played by Benicio del Toro.
Yes, spoiler alert. Me and Jesse didn't really have much to say about The Collector.
Oh, you guys. You're making me so sad.
Look, Jesse doesn't tell you ahead of time what it's going to be.
Okay.
It's always a surprise.
Yeah, I guess that's a thing. When's he going to be on this episode?
When?
Yeah.
Jesse will be on Drunken Angel.
Okay.
And he'll be on Crazed Fruit.
Oh.
Because he mentioned Crazed Fruit, and I told him, well, you're going to be on that episode because you talked about the movie I really like.
He likes Crazed Fruit, too.
Yeah, he likes old Japanese movies also.
Oh, man.
He's seen most of Kurosawa.
He could have been on the show.
He will be eventually. Okay. He should be on Alphabet Flight.
He hasn't invited me.
I asked to be on it.
Oh.
Yeah.
I've got too much pride for that.
Fine.
If you want me to be on your show, I'm available.
So, we have a Twitter, High and Low Pod. At High and Low. I'm not good at Twitter still. An email, highandlowpod@gmail.com. Is a website, whatever. Just do Twitter and SoundCloud.
And, if you Google High and Low Pod, High and Low a Kurosawa podcast, you will find all of our stuff.
Yes, it will show up. And if you go to website in the about section, if you can identify all five, I think five different hellos and what languages they are, then let me know.
Bueno.
I did. I put hello in five different languages in the about section.
Interesting.
And I forgot two of them already. But, so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, hashtag Nakadai forever. Hashtag thug life. FE design.
Hashtag masterpiece. Hashtag I keep burping. Help me.
I think you mean hashtag thug life.
Mm-hmm. See you next time, folks. Thanks.
See you for pigs and battleships.
Bye.